Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and Chris McGregor. And on this Monday, we're bringing on again Mark Hart, the Bible Geek. Mark, Vice President of Life Teen, author of numerous books, affectionately known as the Bible Geek, and we're glad to have him here every Monday with us in this 7:30 hour. And Mark, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, I'll tell you, we had a lot of great discussion from last week's question on Bible verses dealing with abortion and also really trying to understand embryonic stem cell research. And before we get into this week's questions, too, I do want to run the plug-o-meter here a little bit for you because there really is, we got a press release here, a landmark program has now been issued, aimed strictly at teens for the first time in church history, talking about theology of the body for teens, discovering God's plan for love and life. Now, this is a 12-part program based on our late Holy Father John Paul II's original series of Wednesday audiences, 129 of them. This was on human sexuality, and it has become, well, popular to call it theology of the body. And Mark, along with Jason and Crystalina Everett, Brian Butler, and many more, along with consultation with Christopher West, who has certainly had a lot of information out on theology of the body, have put out this wonderful program through Ascension Press. Mark, we want to commend you for the program and then ask you to tell us a little bit about this. How can we integrate this program into the lives of our teens?
Well, the theology of the body, for anybody that's ever seen it, in black and white, or even just seeing the book on the shelf, knows it looks pretty daunting because it is. It's deep theology. It's not a kind of a quick glance sort of thing. It's the kind of thing that really needs to be, as the church would say, you need to ruminate. We need to chew on it. And sometimes the bites are bigger than others. And the easiest way to ruminate and to chew on something so vast and so big and so rich is to take time to cut it into little pieces, to savor each piece. So honestly, what we're trying to put together is something that catechists, that teachers, that even the parents can have that not only breaks it down and cuts up such a rich theology, a rich chunk of steak, if you will, into bite-sized pieces, but something that cuts them up in such a way that they're more easily digestible and palatable for our next generation of Catholics.
Yeah, and we would...
There's multiple lesson plans. It's heavy in activity. It's heavy in analogy and really trying to speak not just to the minds, but more importantly, speak to the hearts of our young people.
Yeah, you bet. And we'd like to thank Matthew Pinto and all the folks at Ascension Press, that is, for making this great program available. And I did want to point out to everybody here, too, that the Knights of Columbus in our area, bringing in one of the principals in this theology of the body for teens, Jason Everett. He'll be in Omaha. He'll be giving his very renowned chastity talk, What If We Really Love Each Other, Wednesday evening, January 31st, 7 p.m. at St. Wenceslaus Church. That's 153rd in Pacific. And the same talk the following evening, February 1st, 7 o'clock at St. Gerald's at 96th and Q. And thanks to our wonderful Knights here in the Omaha area, the cost of this is free. So I'm sure Mark would echo my sentiments in urging parents to highly encourage them to get their teens to attend one or both of these talks.
I absolutely do. And I would say to any of the parents listening, do whatever you have to do. Beg, borrow, and steal your kids out to the talk. What the Jason's presentation, he's refined it. He's done it all over the country. Other countries, I've heard it numerous times. It's very well done, very well researched. Jason is a very close friend of mine, and I honestly think that while your teens might go kicking and screaming and fight you out in the beginning, they, as well as you as a parent, will be very, very glad they went at the end of it.
Right. And that's one of the things you hear often from kids. As a matter of fact, I think we had an interview here with Crystalina Everett, and she had been, quote-unquote, dragged to such a talk at one point in her life, too, and it really changed her life. So don't
all have been.
That's right.
<too. laughs>
Yeah, don't let the protestations derail you one moment from hauling those kids to these talks. Make sure you get out and do it.
Oh, protestations. Good word, Bruce.
Well, I'd like to dig one up every once in a while. That's our 25-cent word of the day.
That was nice.
Well, only us old fogies might know that, but...
Protestations. I'm going to use that later on.
There we go. Let's dust things off here, Mark, shall we? Set the Wayback Machine for all of us dinosaurs here. And this question has come up, and I've heard a couple of different answers from a couple of different people, so I'm going to be very interested to see how the Bible Geek handles this one. Why aren't dinosaurs in the Bible?
Oh, well, I'd love to know what other people say. You know, it's great. When it comes to these kinds of questions, specifically about Genesis, and very specifically about the first 11 chapters of Genesis, the way way that someone responds will often tell you a great deal about their theology, but also their humility.
Right.
The reality is, if anybody ever comes out and says, this is definitively the reason why, you should run away. because nobody knows definitively the answer why.
You bet.
Even the most intelligent, most well-read scholars that I've ever met or read, the ones that I really gravitate towards are those who exhibit the humility enough to say, hey, you know what, honestly, we don't know for sure. Here's my educated guess. And that's I always want to emulate that. That's the stance I take. We don't know for sure. What we do know are several things. The Pentateuch, specifically Genesis, was written from different traditions, whether that's the Yahwist tradition, the Eloist tradition, the Deuteronomic tradition, the priestly tradition. So there's different influences and different styles and different kind of groups and traditions that were offering these different parts of the history, small h.
Mm-hmm.
What we have to understand and remember is that the church does not say we have to take the first 11 chapters of Genesis as scientific, in your faith, histo-scientific truth.
Right.
That there are truths that are to be taken from it. With that in mind, what we do know, for instance, the first 6 days of Genesis are not necessarily to be taken as six 24-hour periods, that it was units of time.
Yes.
So it's notwithstanding to say, it's not to say, okay, well, the dinosaurs, were not mentioned by name. Well, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of levels of creation going on, and there's a lot of animals that are being created. You know, so dinosaurs could have and would have been, in there, because it took a lot longer between the time that light came, between the time that we saw light and the time we saw animals was more than a couple of days.
Yes.
You know, we're talking millions of years here. That's number one. Number two, the reality is that what the church teaches is that all life comes from God. So it was not as though we had all kinds of other mutant life running around, and then all of a sudden God came onto the scene. We know from archaeological fact and data that there were these enormous creatures that we call dinosaurs that roam the earth, mm-hmm. and it wasn't as though that was some huge practical joke that God played, although that would have been very funny.
Yeah.
if he did decide to do that. What's most important and what we always reaffirm is that Genesis was not about how. That's not what the Yahwist and Elohist writers were trying to get across. What they were trying to get across was why. Why did this take place? And who is it about? So really, they were never really concerned with making sure that all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed, and scientifically, how did all these things happen?
Mm-hmm.
We are like that because we are Western-minded, and we are like that because we're a relative culture. We're the same culture that looks up at the sky, and instead of calling it the heavens like they used to in the Old Testament, right. We call it space.
Yeah, we're like, science!
Exactly. Yeah. So we're the ones, we get wrapped up in this stuff.
Yeah.
In the Mediterranean world, centuries and hundreds and thousands of years ago, people didn't get wrapped up in that. They were more concerned with the why,
mm-hmm.
how. So that's what we have to kind of keep in mind, is that it was written by people that had a much different goal. Much like if my goal is to teach my daughter about what kind of boy to date, I'm not going to write out a list for her.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give her examples. I'm gonna talk about the kind of people you should and shouldn't emulate, and what it means to have dignity, and what it means to be a young woman, and what it means to be a real man. And I'm gonna do that through conversation, and I'm gonna do that in other ways. I'm not going to write a specific list of here is the boy you're supposed to date,
mm-hmm.
and here's how he came to be. That's not my goal. However, if my goal was to teach somebody about tax code or the tax laws or that kind of thing, well, then there's a lot of attention to detail there.
Exactly.
So really, the reason I usually tell people the reason that dinosaurs aren't mentioned in the Bible is because everybody hates Barney. that purple guy, I know it's Catholics that created him, but boy, oh.
I know. One exposure is enough.
Well, but you can't always say that. Depends on the crowd.
I know, that's true. And actually, Mark, I mean, if you look at Genesis and if you look at the 6 days, they are very well ordered. And as you point out, the thing that you can't affix to it is that each is a 24-hour period, sunrise to sunset. You can't get that literal with it. But as you go day to day, I mean, each component is very well ordered until you get to Adam and Eve, to man being here on the earth.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. And, what's important, too, to always remember and always realize is that, that God creates in that order of first create, and first it's separation and then decoration.
Yes.
And it's in the decoration where we get a little bit confused.
Yeah.
But that God, there is a method to the madness. But the fact that we do not understand the madness does not mean that there isn't a method.
Absolutely. Well, what do they say? God has a sense of humor. He created us.
Exactly.
All right. All right. Well, let's get into the second part of this question, and this kind of involves dinosaurs, maybe with a small d. Why do people in the Old Testament live to be like 600 years old?
Dinosaurs with a small d.
That's right. How old was Noah? How old was Moses? I heard some guy named, they say, Meth something, parenthetically, was like 800 or something like that. What's the deal? Why did people live so much longer then? Is it just symbolic language? And while we're at it, they're getting personal here. How old are you, Bible geek?
Well, let's start with the end in mind. I'll be proud. I'm in my Jesus year right now. I'm 33.
All right.
But I have more gray hair than most of my seniors, most of the people that I spend time with.
All right. Well, I'll own the fact of being double nickels as of this last January 4th. So.
Well, there you go.
That's right.
Happy birthday. It's a mess something. That's Methuselah.
Methuselah.
The oldest recorded person in Scripture. 969 years old.
Wow.
969. You can read about him in Genesis chapter 5. He's actually Noah's grandfather. A lot of people don't know that.
No, I didn't.
Noah's grandpa is Methuselah. Moses, you know, Moses only lived to be 120.
Oh, sprout.
You know, if you read Deuteronomy 34. But what's great in Deuteronomy 34 is it says, you know, he was 120 when he died, but his eyes were undimmed and his vigor unabated. I love that line. It's
beautiful.
Deuteronomy 34:7. Now, what's interesting is that Moses is credited with writing Deuteronomy, so you wonder if...
might have taken a little self-license there.
Well, no one was right. No one was painting his picture in oils out there on the plains of Moab before they went into the Promised Land, so maybe he was penning himself in. I'm not sure. But yeah, Moses was 120. Noah, it says, lived to be 950, so he checked out about 20 years before his grandpa.
Yeah. Long life in that family.
Exactly. You know, that was something. There's something. I was going to say there's something in the water, but
bada boom.
Stupid pun. You know, it's really kind of funny why people live to be so long. Again, there's literary devices going on. Again, that you know that the Hebrew writers weren't trying to get across the same thing that we do. Some scholars think it's because it took. Some people think it took several thousand years for the full effect of original sin to begin to weigh in on us, lifespan, and essentially reduce our lifespan. You know, that it was kind of like a trickle-down effect, which would explain why Moses lived to be 950 and Noah lived to be 950 and Moses only 120, because there were several generations, I mean, many, many generations separating them. That's one theory. I think the more popular theory that most scholars go with is that it was a literary device by Jewish writers that trying to show prominence, dignity, importance, holiness, God's grace. You know that there's a lot of other reasons for it. You know that it depends what kind of school of thought you were trained in. You know, and we don't really know for sure. You know, that's the reality. And again, I always caution if someone says, "Oh, I know for sure this is the way it is," you know, just take that with an asterisk. You know, usually the response after that is, "Were you there?" We know that Abraham, when he comes onto the scene, it's about 2000 BC. But in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, it really is, it's up for debate. You know, a lot of people blame it on translation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is it that, you know, and I'll give you a newer example. Why is it that that during cycle A, it says, forgive your neighbor 77 times, and cycle C, 2 years later, it says, forgive your neighbor 70 times 7?
Yeah.
You know, translation has a lot to do with it. And if it's interesting, especially when you start studying Hebrew, and I haven't really studied it, but I've studied it enough to learn what not to do. And when you see it in the actual Hebrew, you start to see it's amazing that, you know, about a half an inch line to the left or the right can have a huge difference.
Yes.
I mean, if you have a half an inch going to the left, you're talking about a thousand-year difference than if it goes to the right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be really careful when it comes to that kind of stuff in manuscripts. And That's why when you usually read it in a study Bible, if you read the footnote, depending upon the publisher, you know, and even in Catholic study Bibles, if you read the footnote about this stuff in the Revised Standard Version, it's going to be different than the footnote in the New American, which is going to be different than the footnote in the Jerusalem.
Right.
And those are all Catholic. So imagine what we run into when you start injecting the NIV, the KJV, NRSV, and all the other translations. So, again, what I usually just say, just to, you know, to my brothers and sisters who like me are just trying to live the Catholic life, pass it on to their children, live it in its entirety in their homes and their workplaces, trying to study on their own, going to Mass and just fighting for a parking space and trying to work your way through life through God's grace. What I usually say to them is, don't get too caught up in don't get so caught up in the details and the trees that we miss the forest.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, you know, this really could have been a writer's way of just pointing out how valuable these people were as well, and that God had really granted them long life, because they have ended up being so important to us as time has gone on.
Well, absolutely, and that was one of the, I mean, really, we have to keep remembering, too, like, this is not a people who had weather forecasts.
Yes.
They didn't live 4 and 5 and 6 days in the future. They believed if it was raining, that God was smiling on them.
Yep.
It's that simple. And if it wasn't, that they had done something that upset God. I mean, when you start getting down to those levels, like those levels of simplicity and complexity, what we really see is that these are people that assigned meaning to everything, absolutely everything in their life. And ultimately, they would never have sat and debated, you know, like, you know, how long someone did or didn't live. For them, ultimately, if someone lived a long time, it's because God really loved them.
Yeah. Yeah, and
if he didn't, he didn't. And we know that not to be true.
That's so right. Never says you're out of here until just the right moment.
God's love is not nearly as fickle as we are.
Absolutely. Well, the other thing too, Mark, I think as we progress into a time that is more of our time, I'll go back, you know, a couple thousand years or so, some of the very early church fathers and some of the hermits and so on and so forth who went to live in the desert. I mean, you know, we hear some of these people were 112. Now, we know lifespans may not have been that long back in that point of time, but yet, certainly, even if the average lifespan now is, what, 80 or 81 years old for a man, we still know of people living into their hundreds. And, you know, we get probably a little more accurate reflection of that as time has come closer and record keeping is a lot better.
Well, absolutely. And consider how long we would live if we didn't have preservatives in us.
Yeah.
if we weren't eating some of the stuff we've been eating these days, we'd probably be living even longer.
You got that right.
Technology is trying to keep us alive and make up for what technology's done to us.
You bet. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for being with us today. And also, I want to talk a little bit, too, about the Bible Timeline program that you have, too. We've talked a lot about Theology of the Body for Teens, which has been released. Tell us a little bit about the Bible Timeline for Teens.
Oh, T3 is available. You can get it on lifeteen.com. We'll send it out to you within a day or two. You can get through Ascension Press. You can get it on Amazon, probably even in any Catholic bookstore where you might be. You know, T3, again, is based on Jeff Cavin's Great Adventure Bible Study Series, but I really, when I wrote it and designed it, when we produced it, because we produced it through Life Teen, we didn't just produce it for teens, we produced it for adults, we produced it for young adults, anybody who might work with teens, might have teens in their own home, might have little ones who are going to be teens, but basically I really wrote it, and in my heart, I really wrote it for people in my family, my brothers and sister and family members, my parents even, who, you know, were raised cradle Catholic, who, you know, went to parochial school and who had a desire to go deeper in Scripture but didn't really know where to start. It's a lot of fun. The DVD series is a lot of fun. It's very interactive. It's graphically, it's very rich. It moves very fast, and it's really story-driven. At first glance, if someone sees or hears, oh, it's going to be a DVD series about the Bible and about, yeah, you know, salvation history and about the timeline of Scripture, that might seem kind of dry or kind of boring, and I would feel the same way. Bearing that in mind, tried to stay true to Jeff's program, but really draw out all the stories, some of the different stories that we have heard, some that we haven't heard, mm-hmm, but how they all interrelate, most specifically how they relate to our life even in 2007.
Well, it's a great program. We want to encourage everyone to check that out. And as well, as we mentioned at the top of the program, Theology of Body for the Teens, Discovering God's Plan for Love and Life, Catholic Schools, Religious Education Programs, Youth Ministry, Home Study. It's all there through Ascension Press. And glad to have the Bible Geek with us for another Monday. Mark Hart, thanks so much. God bless you, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Love you guys. Be good.